This
is URN.
Hello and welcome to Nerd of Mouth, the weekly show where we talk about all things nerdy. We'll be with you for the next half an hour. My name is Philippa, I use she, her pronouns. My nerdy thing this week is I have been perusing the Reddit subreddit Unearthed Arcana, which is homebrew D&D. So I've been enjoying looking up strange monsters such as a very angry goose and also actual cannibal Shia LaBeouf as a D&D monster. So that's been my fun thing. And I'm joined by...
Hello, my name is Jamie. My pronouns are he and him, and the nerdy thing I've been doing this week is reading Neil Stevenson's novel Snow Crash, which is sort of a 90s predictor of where the internet was going, which is right in many ways, but wrong in many, many others.
What are some predictions it makes, and are any of them any good?
Well, the main thing it makes is more in terms of capitalism than in terms of the internet, but that sort of says that capitalism will reproduce various things like a virus, and that also works on a sort of computer science level and a sort of religious level as well. But what it does get right about the internet is that programming or going on particular websites for any great length of time actually alters the way that your brain works. So stuff like Twitter will actually make your brain function in a different way than otherwise. And he says it makes sort of hackers uniquely susceptible to physicalized computer viruses, which doesn't work as well. But he's right on many of the slightly less fantastical versions of it.
That sounds interesting. I have definitely heard about that before, but haven't read it myself.
Yeah.
So this week, our topic is time travel. I would sing the Doctor Who theme song, but I won't attempt that because it's only me and I do not have a synthesizer in my voice. Time travel obviously can kind of encompass a lot of things. I'll sort of start in what I kind of imagine like as the main areas of time travel. So obviously like it could be like in Doctor Who where you have a time machine that can go anywhere, or like in Back to the Future with the DeLorean and things like that. But also you could be just traveling to the future, just traveling to the past, maybe a time loop or things like that. But what are your thoughts, like, in general on time travel? Are you a fan of time travel storylines?
For those of you who have not met me before, yes, I am I am very fond of time travel storylines. And those of you that have already met me will know this in excruciating detail. I mean, I think there's clearly a very standard definition of time travel, which is when there are two separate time periods in a story that a character gets to through some sort of either scientific or fantastical means. I'm always slightly surprised because I have seen, you know, the first elements of time travel came out in fantasy rather than science fiction.
Mm.
So I think the earliest version of it is in a book called Rip Van Winkle, which I think is Mark Twain, but I could very much be wrong, where a man effectively... Oh, no, what I'm thinking about with Mark Twain is a Connecticut knight in King Arthur's Court, where I think a man goes back in time. But Rip Van Winkle is very much a man goes into the future 100 years and sees things. And obviously, H.G. Wells then sort of cemented the genre with the time machine. But, you know, since then, a lot of the time in the early ones, time travel was just used as a way to get to a fantastical location and put a character from contemporary times into a fantastical place, much synonymous with utopian and now dystopian fiction. But sort of now we're in a more postmodern era, we are more likely to use time travel not just as a means to get to a location, but to have an effect within a location as well. So there's room for jumping about and non-linear stories and everything.
Yeah, definitely. And, like, sometimes there might be sort of almost deliberate paradoxes and things created and storylines revolving around the actual time travel rather than just it being, like, we want to do a historical thing, but with modern people. I was thinking about... So when I was thinking about recording this, I kind of went and looked at how much stuff there was on time travel, and there's so many stories, more than I had really remembered, including ones I had watched myself, but I was just thinking about some of my favourites, so we can maybe talk about this for a bit. So obviously Doctor Who, like, classic. I think everyone immediately thinks of time travel and Doctor Who having the actual time machine allowing them to kind of do a lot of different things with time. But one of my favourites is also The Time Bandits, which is dwarfs time travelling with a small boy. I watched it quite young, and it definitely influenced a lot of my dreams, and I had a lot of sort of, like, weird dreams, like the boy does when he wakes up and there's all these dwarves in his bedroom. I definitely thought that was going to happen to me at some point. But I really like that one. And then Timeline, which is not very well known. It came out in 2003, and it's about these archaeologists that time travelled back to 14th century France, but then they kind of get stuck, and then some of them can go back and some of them can't, and then there's this weird, like, there's a lot of flashbacks, well, flash forwards to the present where they've accidentally left stuff in as clues for the other people who were on the other side to try and get them back, which I quite like. I like the flash forward stuff as well. I think I know you like Doctor Who. What are some of your other favourite time travel films or games or books?
One film I really like is About Time by Richard Curtis, which is, it's a very good, very sentimental film, but it's also quite notable for being one of the four films that Rachel McAdams plays a romantic lead to the time traveller, but does not herself get to time travel, which is a sad state of affairs to be in. And it is the fact that Richard Curtis decides it's entirely down the male line that the time travel gene is passed on is a bit not great, but it's got Bill Nighy in it, which makes up for a great number of sins. It's one of those things where you think, oh yeah, that's a great film, and then you think, oh no, hang on a minute, if I think about that for a moment, there are a shocking number of sexist things in there, which, come on, Richard Curtis, you can do better than that. And stop making fat jokes. You make fat jokes in every single one of your films. They haven't aged well. But yeah, I mean, primarily Doctor Who. Legends of Tomorrow, actually, I think is... it starts off a bit choppy because they like to sort of do the... Okay, there's a... In Doctor Who fandom, there's a distinction between types of stories. There's called Gun and Frog. So Gun is your sort of your hardline space military aliens sort of things, whereas Frog is sort of a, oh, we've got a time machine, let's go back in time and mingle with either sort of... your Jane Austen sort of characters and have play off the fish out of water thing, or put them in a sort of a Star Wars sort of space opera sort of thing. And I think what's nice about Legends of Tomorrow is it starts off very Gun, but after a while it just goes, actually, you know what, we've got a lot of fun characters here, let's just every week put them in a different situation and have a bit of fun with them. And I think it does that very well, even if it does have some very questionable sort of time travel mechanics. But I can sort of, most things just sort of, they have to set up the rules very early on in order to make sure that these things work. And because obviously we don't have a hard and fast rule about how time works at the moment, you can just sort of make things up for any sort of thing, really. There are a few sort of sets of rules that I can go into now if you want, or if it's...
Yeah, go for it.
Okay. So when you're time travelling, there are a few things you can do because everyone's sort of a little bit scared of putting paradoxes in their work. So there are various ways of sort of working around them. There's the Back to the Future model, which is if you go back into the past and you change time, you have a certain amount of time, quite often it's not that long at all, to set everything right. Otherwise, you will fade out of existence and that time will become set. There is the alternate dimension theory of time travel, which is every time you go back in time, you're not really going back in time, you're going back to a separate dimension, which is the same up until you make the change. And there is the Novikov self-consistency principle, which is effectively, if you go back in time, you will completely by accident set about the chain of events that leads to the present that you went to in the first place.
Yeah. And there's also the common rule of sometimes you're not allowed to interact with yourself. So, like, in Harry Potter, with the time turner, one of the major rules is, like, you shouldn't try and interact with your past self because your past self, in that scenario, won't understand. But in some scenarios, it's like, that could just make you sort of explode out of existence, which I quite like. I think I've definitely seen the alternate dimension one done in, I think it's Artemis Fowl, like the sixth book, so you've got to be a bit of a hardcore Artemis Fowl fan to get there. But they end up in this time paradox type thing, and the only way to get back is to sort of, I can't remember the exact story, but it's definitely something to do with an alternate dimension, and then it's only once they leave it that it's fixed. But yeah, you make a really good point about time paradox. Like, that kind of is definitely the main sort of issue that people have with time travel. And I think, I know, for example, my partner really has trouble watching time travel stuff because he gets annoyed about the fact that there will pretty much always be a paradox. Now, for me, that doesn't bother me that much because I'm happy to suspend my disbelief. But then I think then if the people in the story bring it up, then it can kind of start questioning that. So I remember in Doctor Who, it was still Christopher Eccleston, and Billy Piper goes back to the day her dad died, and tries to, like, stop it from happening. And then they get attacked by are these weird time monsters, which never have come back again, from what I remember, I don't think. But it was basically saying, like, some points in history are very much fixed. But then they have to then get around that sometimes with other things, saying, like, other times are not fixed. But I like their explanation, which is just timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly.
I mean, the episode you're talking about is called Father's Day. It's by Paul Cornell, who isn't credited enough for being one of the architects of the Doctor Who revival. He's sort of the most, not the most prolific author, but the most impactful author of the time when Doctor Who wasn't on air. And sort of his ideas have certainly shaped Russell T. Davis and Stephen Moffat's version of the shows. The Reapers, which are the monsters, they explain in that that they're not a common occurrence. They are a result of A, the Time Lords being gone and not being able to release them, and B, the fact that not only did the Doctor and Rose go back in time to see Rose's dad die, they then, after that, went back in time one more time because Rose hit her eyes, which made it an exceptionally weak point in time, hence opening the scar that the Reapers to act as sort of white blood cells to come in and cleanse the thing.
Yeah.
And that's quite a lot of the time why whenever two people go back in time and touch their younger selves, they sort of both simultaneously vanish, because it's sort of, it's effectively cleaning the wound. It's making sure that there aren't any plot holes, and time travel is uniquely susceptible to having those sort of plot holes. But yes, I think, as you say, the phrase timey-wimey is a fantastic thing. It covers all branches of things, as is the phrase spoilers, as a way of saying, actually, no, you probably shouldn't learn these things in the past. But also a thing from either the 10th or the 20th anniversary of the original Doctor Who is the idea that Time Lords... I mean, the first rule of time is that you shouldn't go back in time and meet yourself. But Time Lords have this thing where they can sort of synchronise their minds. So they're all on the same sort of wavelength and know what's happening. But as soon as their timelines become unsynced and they go back in their separate TARDISes, they go back to knowing what they knew beforehand.
Mm.
So as to get rid of any sort of problems, which I think are various little handy things, but Doctor Who being Doctor Who, it sort of rewrites the rules of time travel every so often.
Yes.
I think...
that makes me think of the Clara thing that went on. I didn't watch massive amounts of Peter Capaldi's first bit with Clara, because I found Clara a little bit annoying in places. But the whole thing... But it was mostly because of the idea of this, oh, the impossible girl, what could she possibly be doing? She's so amazing, and blah, 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 blah. And then it was like, oh, she just jumped into this thing. Okay, right, fine. But, yeah, you're right. And then he doesn't remember because it's later in his... keeping track of stuff can be quite confusing. I was thinking also... another one that happens in the specific type of time travel is something like Groundhog Day, which is the repeated day. I suppose you could technically say it's time travel, but obviously it's sort of its own thing as well. And thinking about that, and then there's a recent one of that is Russian Doll on Netflix, which is absolutely brilliant. Would recommend it. But both of those, there's an interesting conundrum of, on the final day when you solve it, are your final actions the ones, like, does the day then continue, or do you get to then do the day one more time and carry on, which I always think is quite interesting. I think there was a Halloween film called, like, Birthday or something.
Happy Death Day.
Happy Death Day, that's it. And, like, yeah, the same
and
question
And a sequel,
there.
Happy Death Day 2, you.
Yes. I have not seen the sequel. I enjoyed the first one, but, I didn't really feel like seeing the second one. But, yeah, again, like, I think that's an interesting one of, do you allow people to then fix the final mistakes, or are they going to do some sort of big sacrifice, like, we can finish it today, but so-and-so will die? So I do like a lot of the plot points that get brought up with time travel issues. So I do think it's a cool use of that.
The sort of the Groundhog Day model of time travel has become almost a genre in and of itself, and there are many reasons why it's been successful. I do class it as time travel because it's effectively, since one person retains knowledge, it's just them leaping back in time, usually 24 hours. And being able to go on again. And what makes it good is it sort of sticks to the sort of the Aristotelian unities, which are sort of Aristotle laid out various things that he said, these are what the perfect drama should do. It should stay in one location, it should take place over a day, it should feature all of the same characters, and there are various other ones, and there are many ways in which he's wrong, obviously, because there are other ways to do things. But the idea of setting it sort of in the same place over the same period is good, and it gives a character a way to overcome problems in not a variety of creative ways. It shows them growing and learning to overcome that, because in a lot of drama, it can quite often be the character gets hit by this and they don't really get a chance to sort of come to terms with it. They just have to move on to the next thing, as is true to life, but drama is most satisfying when it is a person struggling with a problem and having to grow and overcome it. And you can see in every iteration that character growing and getting better, and then at the end of it, it sort of it has a built-in character arc as well. So, for example, Groundhog Day, it goes from Phil Connors, Bill Murray being mean and a bit grouchy to him going, actually, you know what, I'm not as disdainful as this, of this town anymore. I'm not bigger than it. I am willing and open to love. And that's a lovely thing. And I know certainly, as you say, Happy Death Day, and there's an episode in Legends of Tomorrow where they do a very clever thing where they've got a new character who isn't feeling like part of the group. And effectively, by putting them in that Groundhog Day scenario, you get almost, I think it's about a year's worth of bonding with them in that one episode. So it's used very creatively, and I've seen a lot of people do it very well. Doctor Who's done it twice. There's an episode called Chimes of Midnight, which lots of people say is the best Eighth Doctor audio, where it's a two-for-one because you had a Christmas episode with it as well. It's just the same tragedy happening in the same Christmas action. And Heaven Sent, which is debatably the best show, the best episode of Doctor Who ever, which is a Peter Capaldi episode, which you won't necessarily have seen. You see how I've brought this back to Peter Capaldi so I can talk about how him and Clara are the best ones.
Donna forever!
Yeah. I won't say too much, but Heaven Sent's a great bit of character work for Peter Capaldi, and while I agree that the Impossible Girl arc has some problems, I think the main point that it's trying to get across is the Doctor views Clara a bit too much as a mystery there, and the fact is that she just made a, as you say, a very ordinary choice to just go into this thing that we knew was going to happen and then just becomes very important to him, and largely just to step into the 50th anniversary and introduce John Hurt. That's the main thing it does in that episode.
Well, actually, thinking about it, I think the reason why it made me upset about Clara is not so much that I didn't like the idea, but I think this maybe moves on to another area of time travel stuff, which is that I really liked that she was, like, Victorian and that he was going to have this Victorian companion. And I was really excited to have that set there rather than her being a modern companion, which obviously, like, I'm a historian, so I can, like, I'm more excited probably than the average person for that. Which kind of brings me on to another area of time travel, which is if you go to the past, interacting with history and sort of some of the issues that can come, both in terms of story, but for the people, like, for the characters. So one of the reasons I've been really enjoying the latest Doctor Who season is having Jodie Whittaker. Yes, not Jodie Foster, Jodie Whittaker, as, you know, a female doctor, and they've dealt with it in the Witch Hunter episode where it's like, oh, people aren't listening to her because she's a woman, because at that time people probably wouldn't have listened to her. Or they did the episode in like the American South, and they had a black character who obviously faces a lot of difficulties that you wouldn't have otherwise. Which is another reason why I like Timeline, because in that, they're in 14th century France, and all the Americans get put in prison because they think that they're English, because there's the Hundred Years' War going on at that time. But it can create some issues as well, like with a lot of historical anachronism. So, for example, this Christmas, the wonderful film A Night Before Christmas, where a knight gets transported to, is it Ohio? Somewhere in America. And they are perfectly happy with him driving a car, and he seems not at all confused about them owning a refrigerator, and like not at all confused about a lot of things that he would be very, very confused about, which again, like, maybe I could suspend my disbelief, apart from I study medieval history, so that kind of creates a lot of problems for me watching certain types of time travel stuff, because it just annoys me. But that is a specific problem maybe related to me. I don't know how much, like, well, does it bother you when you see something that's kind of really obviously incorrect?
I don't think it bothers me particularly, because it sort of, it goes with the territory, and an awful lot of drama is sort of having unexpected sort of relationships to things. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, for one. Fun fact about that, they were going to use the DeLorean as a time machine, but they couldn't get the rights to it, so they chose a phone box because it was a bit like a TARDIS. But they just sort of effectively get various people from the past, send them to the future, and then effectively they have fun going around the 1980s mall. So you've got Napoleon on a skateboard, you've got, what's his name, Beethoven playing sort of electric pianos, guitars, and so on. So it doesn't, I can see that, especially if you're history-minded, there'll be times where you go, ah, no, this is awful. Every time you go back to a Viking period and they're wearing horned hats and you think, ah, no, this is a Hollywood invention. And it's... So there are ways in which, unfortunately, our media has impacted our view of history. And especially, and I think one of the ways that it's done that is sort of the idea that everything before about 1960 is just entirely white people, which is obviously wrong because, you know, we have multiple records of people living here. Granted, history is, most of the surviving records will be about sort of the upper classes, which would be absolutely primarily white.
I mean, literally yesterday, for some of my research, I was reading up on the immigrant database, which is a very interesting website. You can look at, like, medieval immigration, and there's so many people coming, even just to Nottingham, for example, like, there's so many people coming from, like, Europe, Spain, you know, the Middle East are coming with spice merchants things. So, yeah, you're absolutely right. Like, there's no reason for you not to put people in. It's just because... Yeah. Yes.
So... This was some of the opposition to there being a female doctor was the idea that going back in time, you'd have people going, ah, no, we won't listen to that person because they're a woman. So they lose the sort of... David Tennant in the episode The Shakespeare Code, which I look back on, and has a lot of problems and is written by a very, very problematic individual. But he goes back and Martha says, well, you know, wouldn't I have problems here? And he just goes, oh, no, you just strut around like you own the place. It works for me. And, you know, of course it works for you. You're a very white man. Mm. I think especially sort of definitely late Capaldi era when you had Bill as a companion. There's an episode that makes a point of going back in time and showing that the Regency London wasn't entirely white, which on one hand I can see is potentially a bit of a narrative cop-out because you don't want to have to deal with You don't want to have to display the gruesome effects of racism every...
In a children's TV show.
Yeah, every Saturday. But also at the same time is more true to fiction. You brought up Rosa, the episode with Rosa Parks set in the American South.
Yeah.
And this sort of brings into a question sort of two different groups of history and how time travel interacts with it. So there's a great man theory of history, which is largely debunked, where the idea that history is shaped by notable individuals... and there's the bottom-up theory of history, which is sort of more sociologically inclined and explores social conditions and how that forces people into and events into shape. And so with episodes like Rosa, which is a very commendable episode, you have the problem that... and this is something Doctor Who always has to sort of walk on a tightrope around, is the Doctor in any way responsible for the events of history? In Rosa, I think they played it the best way they can, which is to say the Doctor has had to largely stay out of this and to make sure that history has gone exactly the same way.
Well, I liked in Rosa that they had that other guy who was time-travelling, was trying to disrupt it as well.
Crasco.
Yeah, that was it. So it sort of like forced them to have to take part, whereas otherwise they would have stayed out of it. So I did like that. But you're right, I think sometimes self-inserting the characters into... moment can feel a bit weird depending on what's going on there.
This problem is most prominent in Back to the Future, where Marty goes back to 1955,
something like that,
and he starts playing Johnny B. Good, at which point Chuck Berry's brother gets him on the phone and says, listen to this. And it turns out a white guy has invented rock and roll and also inspires the first black mayor to run for mayor, which is why Doctor Who tends not... You know, there are the occasional things where the Doctor's allowed to sort of, when he meets Shakespeare, he's allowed to chum up with him and suggest some lines. But when it comes to Rosa Parks, you have to stay out of the way. And I think that's why... Certainly, after 2012, Doctor Who decided to go less from the celebrity historical, which is what it's traditionally called, and into the sort of just theme park history where you just get to mess around with characters who aren't big names.
Thinking of that, I think one of the episodes I really liked, I know we're talking about Doctor Who a lot, but I think it's really pertinent because obviously it's so much to do with it. But I think it was called The Girl in the Fireplace.
Oh, yeah.
Which is about, like, they've got this fireplace in the ship and they keep turning it and she's got these clockwork thingies after her. But then at the very end of the episode, it's revealed that I think she's Marie Antoinette. or something like
Madame
that.
Madame de Pompadour.
Madame de Pompadour, that's it. Yes. Some French lady. This is not my area of history. My area of history is a bit early in this. Anyway, but what I liked about that is that it's sort of, it's her youth that is impacted. It's just like a sort of influence. But it's not the actual moment of a momentous changing moment. It's just like, oh, you've influenced this person, maybe with sort of an idea, which, as you say, is similar to the Shakespeare episode. Like, I'd like that a lot more, I think, than, oh, we are directly changing this giant piece of history. So, yeah.
Mm. Yeah, I love Girl in the Fireplace. It's a fantastic episode. There's something that's slightly... No, this would just be going back into Doctor Who again. I don't know, I will, but there's a... In the most recent series, in Spyfall, the Doctor meets up with Ada Lovelace, who is one of the first computer programmers, and her work on computer programs and the difference engine effectively invented computing. But the problem is that sort of by the end of the episode, the Doctor takes her to the future, she sees the future, and then the Doctor wipes her memory, which is... Especially during the Capaldi era, the idea of memories became very synonymous with agency. Mm. And so to sort of take that away became a bit of a problem on the basis that, you know, you don't want to change the future. That's the... not change the future, but, you know, events have to... I'm always more in favour of things that say, actually, you know what, let's play a little bit fast and loose with time travel. I don't mind if there are paradoxes.
Mm.
Because there's not really any consequence to it. I love it when that happens. But when there's a strict, actually, we have to keep things exactly as it is, it tends to rob characters of agency, and sometimes it robs historical figures of agency, which is almost worse. A lot worse.
I think I like when it works where it's sort of almost as if the time traveller is fated to end up with the same result. So, like Butterfly Effect, except that effect has already happened because it's a fixed point, so... They might end up accidentally doing something that causes it, but that was almost always going to happen. So I think that's what I like, is when the paradox is actually in favour of almost a reveal of how they have impacted the past. Almost like a thriller, like a time thriller.
Yeah.
I think actually that can be a genre in sci-fi, possibly. Sci-fi is not my main area of interest, but... sort of like they end up doing something quite small, which still allows the people in the past to make the decision... But it's like, it's just presented itself to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Versus, oh, look, I've shown you this amazing new thing.
I know this isn't strictly time travel, but the example struck me most as Lion King 3, or sometimes known in America as Lion King 1.5, which is effectively the events of The Lion King, but from Timon and Pumbaa's perspective, and how they sort of accidentally set in motion an awful lot of the stuff. So, for example, the big one is all of the animals bowing at the start of The Lion King when Simba is born is actually Pumbaa farting and all of the animals sort of keel over from the smell. There's an episode of Quantum Leap, which is a main one, that you don't... that has a surprising end. And I always quite like this. It's the Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban effect, which is... in order to keep the timeline straight, everything has to look the same, so there's nothing changed, but actually something has been changed at the end, and that's what makes the whole time travelling worth it. And in the episode of Quantum Leap, they go back in time, and it's the JFK assassination, and the guy tries to stop the assassination, but ends up unsuccessful, and JFK is dead, and he goes at the end, ah, no, I'm disappointed, I didn't stop this. And they go, actually, no, you made a difference. In the original timeline, Jackie Kennedy also died. So you've made a difference. And that's what I quite like about Doctor Who, is it dances the line and it goes, I can't change history too much, but I can sort of make these small changes to make it better for little people.
Yeah, I think that's a good point for us to end on. We're coming towards the end of our time. But time travel is interesting when it almost... We know what's going to happen in it, but that's not necessarily the point of going to the past. I mean, the future, that could be a whole episode in itself, really. But, the little things changing and yet some things still remaining the same, and seeing how it all slots together is, I think, what I like the best about time travel. So drawing to a close, we will be with you the same time next week. If you want to find us on social media, we are Nerd of Mouth at Nerd of Mouth URN on Twitter and Instagram. Right, so you'll catch us the same time next week.